This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. On Monday, poet Richard Blanco will read a poem that he has specifically penned for President Obama's inauguration. The White House tapped Blanco to be the 2013 inaugural poet. Blanco is Cuban. He is openly gay. And in his author statement, he describes himself as made in Cuba, assembled in Spain, and imported to the United States. Joining me to talk about Richard Blanco is Ilan Stabenz, professor in Latin American and Latino culture at Amherst. He's on the line from WFCR in Amherst. Ilan Stabenz, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And here with me in Studio 3 is journalist Maria Hinojosa, anchor and executive producer of Latino USA, which we are now broadcasting on 89.7 on Sundays at 6 p.m. She's here to talk about a discussion of labor rights of domestic workers here in Boston. And the event is free and open to the public tonight. And to learn more, visit WGBH.org/BPR. I'll get it together. Maria Hinojosa, thanks for being here.
Hi, Callie. Hola, Ilan.
Hola, ¿cómo estás?
Good.
So a great amount of excitement, both from Richard Blanco himself and lots of other folks, that he has been named to be the inaugural poet. He's only the fifth, and he's so young, and he's also Latino and gay. First from you, Maria. Had you heard of him before first?
You know what? I had heard of him, but to be honest with you, and this is my fault, right? I should be reading poetry every day. Probably Ilan does, but you know, I'm too busy. So I feel very, very bad that I hadn't read his work before, but I had heard of him. I think that I think that Richard Blanco signifies this new American mainstream. Everything about him I don't have to look at it through a political lens, but you can, which is, this is the electorate that essentially got this president mm-hmm. elected. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the new American mainstream. An immigrant, but truly 100% American, raised here, Miami. And then what we love the most is that he lives in Bethel, Maine, you know, in some small rural town. And he's gay and has a partner. One of his poems, he writes about the experience. And all of the new American mainstream gets his story, whether or not they live it. They have experienced in one way or another, which is like, you know, Richard was saying to his abuelita, his grandmother, look, I want the traditional Thanksgiving dinner, the one my friends have, the one I see on television. I want the turkey and the stuffing and the mashed potatoes and the cranberry sauce. And la abuelita was like, no, mijito, tiene que haber lechón. There's got to be pernil. There's got to, you know, pork. This is what, you know, Cubans celebrate and eat with, right? A big, you know, massive, delicious slab of pork. And then there's the whole a poem about this, you know, this moment, right, where, you know, the turkey comes out tasting really dry. But, you know, the pork was amazing. That kind of tenderness about stories of the new America is what he represents. So it makes perfect sense that he would be doing this. And of course, it doesn't hurt that he does represent these constituency Latinos, who clearly played a major role in the electing of this president, and the gay community.
Ilan Stabenz, to take up Maria's point here, I just want to quote from Dante Ramos's editorial in the Boston Globe, and he says this, Blanco is the Obama coalition embodied. He represents not just demographic groups, but also geographic areas that came through for the incumbent in November. But the deeper affinity is between Blanco's verse and Obama's own prose. Both hint that the writer's life could have taken plenty of other paths. So speak to what Maria said about what he represents, and then if you would take us to they both represent people who could have taken other paths.
Richard Blanco is a sweet, passionate, engaging poet, one that is really connected with what the United States is today. But I am hesitant to suggest that he represents the Latino constituency. He is a Cuban American. The majority of Latinos in the U.S. are of a Mexican American background. If this was really a choice to go for a representative Latino, at least demographic, statistically, the choice would have been Mexicans. 6 out of every 10 Latinos are of Mexican background, and only one or half of one come from Cuba. On the other hand, one hopes that this wasn't only a political move, but that it had to do with the quality of Richard's poetry, which I find always really crystalline and humane and with inner resonances. I've been reading his poetry for a long time. I've included it in the Norton Anthology of Latino Literature, which I serve as a general editor. And I just wished that I was able to read President Obama's mind and understand why this choice was made. Not that I question the choice in any way. I think that that Richard Blanco is a terrific poet that will speak to the nation and to the world on Monday in a way that will really enhance the American experience altogether. But in many ways, the White House and the inaugural committee has played the role of a literary critic and has made a selection. And I'm sure there were other candidates out there. I don't want to know who was not chosen. I simply want to know why the connection here. And I think Maria is totally right. The connection has to do with the Obama being a representative of the diverse America that we have today, and Richard really connects with that. But Latinos, and Maria knows this well, Latinos have an ambivalent relationship with President Obama. We can't figure out if he is a non-white president or he is a black president. That is, if he represents the entire spectrum, the rainbow of possibilities where Latinos are part, or if he represents the black community much more than any other. Now, President Obama does not identify himself, at least he hasn't done it in office, as an African-American. But it's very interesting to see how different groups, Cuban Americans, Puerto Ricans, Mexican Americans, have a different relationship with the president. And I am struck by the fact that that he chose Richard, a wonderful poet, and would like to know why.
Let me just let people know who you are. Elon Stabenz is a professor in Latin America and Latino culture at Amherst, and he's on the line from WFCR in Amherst. Now, you've raised some really provocative points, so I'd ask this question, and then I'd get your response and turn it over to Maria Hinojosa, who is also here. And that is, if you're questioning a little bit about his being Cuban and not Mexican-American, where most Latino folks that we would think about the majority are Mexican-American, maybe his being gay balanced that. So he was looking at, I don't know, President Obama's mind either, but that's two constituencies in one, if you will. So you get both the Latino part of it, even if not Mexican-American, but you also get a gay constituency, which was extremely important as well.
No doubt, Gally. Although, on the other hand, I wish that this was about poetry and not about politics, and
yes,
that we knew that President Obama had read Richard Blanco's work and had identified with it, and this was a choice that put poetry first and politics second. I don't want in any way to sound as if I am having second thoughts about Richard Blanco. I adore his work. I feel he is an extraordinary poet. I am delighted that he is being brought out of relative obscurity to the international stage. He certainly deserves it. I simply would like to understand that question that you were asking of what is the relationship between President Obama and Richard Blanco in a way that was clearer the first time around in the first inauguration when President Obama chose an African-American, a woman, to deliver the inaugural poet. And he said that he had read her work and loved it. So a simple, you know, President Obama is an extraordinary writer. He is a man of words, and he is a man with a genuine literary sensibility. He is not only a writer, but a superb reader. And as a reader myself, I would simply want to know what is the connection between these two individuals, beyond the fact that I can put the odyssey of going from the outskirts of culture to center stage as the parallel that brings them together.
Maria.
Well, I don't know, Ilan, but if I was Richard and I heard you talking, I'd say I think Ilan has major second thoughts about me being chosen
to read. All.
Well, it sounds that way. So I don't know if you want to, but it definitely sounds that way. And here's what I'm thinking. You know what? On this one, I am extraordinarily critical of this administration. Like any other administration, as you know, the frontline that we produced, Lost in Detention, held this administration very accountable to its treatment of immigrants and predominantly Latino immigrants. So I am not in any way speaking for the administration, giving the administration a pass. But here it is. I'm like, when I first heard about this, I was like, poetry. Yes, poetry. Important. Important in a moment when our country is facing so many divisions. So I actually do think, Ilan, that it is about poetry first. For me, my interpretation is that, and I do love the narrative of Richard Blanco, you know, this you know, gay Cuban poet who's living in Maine someplace, you know, being chosen. I think it is extraordinarily wonderful about the narrative of where we are in the United States today. And I think it says something also about the Cuban community, right? It is another Cuban community. It is the Cuban community that he is the second generation. Mm. And so, yeah, if you want to look at that politically, that's fascinating. But I think that the critique around, well, which you raised, Ilan, he's not Mexican. The great majority of Latinos who voted for this president have Mexican background. And there's somehow a moment there. I actually think that the Latino community, for example, looking at Sonia Sotomayor, they totally get it. They completely 100% get it. And Mexicans who, you know, carry their own biases as well. You know, we all know that there are complexities within any community. Mm-hmm. So the same within the Latino Latin American community. So for Mexicanos to say, you know, La puertorriqueña, the Puerto Rican Supreme Court justice, and be able to identify with her is very powerful. It says a lot about the development of this new form of the Latino community in the United States that is much more open. And so I think that the same thing goes in terms of Richard Blanco, Cuban-American, you know, speaks perfect Spanish with the Cuban tone. I think that says a lot about the new face of who the modern Latinos are in the United States of America.
All right. That's Maria Hinojosa. She is a journalist and anchor and executive producer of Latino USA. Ilan, enough talking about him. I'd love to hear some of his work that you've long admired. Would you read one of his poems?
With much pleasure. This is a poem by Richard that is titled When I Was a Little Cuban Boy. It belongs to his book, The Directions to the Beach of the Dead, that was published in 2005. And it, just as Maria was saying, it plays with language, aside from all the other themes that your listeners will get. It plays with language in a marvelous way. It uses Spanish, but it uses Spanglish as well. And it had the music of that coming and going between languages is clearly seen on the page, if not always when one hears it. Here it goes. Oh, Jose, can you see? That's how I sang it when I was a Cubanito in Miami, and America was some country in the glossy pages of my history book, someplace way north, everyone white, cold, perfect. This land is my land. So why didn't I live there in a brick house with a fireplace, a chimney with curlicues of smoke? I wanted to wear breeches and stockings to my chins, those black pilgrim shoes with shiny gold buckles. I wanted to eat yams with the Indians, shake hands with Los Negros, and dash through snow I'd never seen in a one-horse hope and say. I wanted to speak in British, say really smart stuff like fourth core and 7 years ago, or one country under God, indivisible. I wanted to see that land with no palm trees, only the strange sounds of flowers like petunias, ponies, impatience, waiting to walk through a door someday, somewhere in God Bless America, and say, Lucy, I'm home, honey. I'm home.
I love that because there's humor in it. It speaks to his experience, both as the immigrant experience, as Maria has been talking about, but also his very much being a part of America. I think it also says something else. I'll say this to the two of you. He's got a real young sensibility. Mm-hmm. He mm-hmm. is the mm-hmm. youngest poet to be named an inaugural poet at 44.
And so part of that youngness, I think, and the playfulness of his language that Ilan just pointed out, I think we're going to all see on center stage. I mean, no crees, Ilan, that he's going to interject some Spanish in this play. I mean, right? De seguro, no?
Ay, de seguro. I'm hopeful. At the very least, that he will. And he is just a charmer. He will do it in a way he must be anxious. This is the biggest stage he's ever been. This is the biggest stage any poet can imagine to be. He will be using his poetry to convey the experience of Latinos to a world that is understanding that the United States is more and more diverse. He is a poet that makes no apologies for poetry, that comes from a background that is in engineering, in architecture, and only later in life realized that his calling was with words, with the meanings and sounds of those words. And he is if he can be said to be married to anything, I think that first and foremost he will probably say it is to his language. And that language is not the English language alone or the Spanish or the Spanglish language, but to language, the language that we share together, the one that goes beyond nationalisms or a clearly defined cultural pattern. And in that, I couldn't agree with you more, Maria. He's not a Latino poet only. He is a Latino poet in the United States, an American poet of Latino background, and more than anything, a poet, which is what I adore of his work.
Yeah, but the interesting thing about him is that, you know what, he writes about his kind of identity confusion, if you will, the battles around identity. He's clearly an immigrant, we know this, but he's not angry. Mm. Right, Ilan?
He's not angry.
He's not angry, and I think that's interesting. Because that, you know, there could be a lot of other expressions where that is part of the story, and it's not.
Sure. And in Latino literature, as you know, their anger is an important
exactly.
feature and,
exactly.
and a necessary feature, because the Latino experience has not been easy. Has gone through all sorts of hurdles and difficulties. And Richard is both an immigrant and a second generation, in that he, as he said it, he was conceived abroad and was brought to the United States when he was very young. That constitutes really being an immigrant, because he has almost probably a very short or no memory of what happened before his arrival to the United States. But he has grown up in this country. He knows what it means. The country has been good to him, and he has been good for the country. And I think that he represents, he symbolizes the challenges and the reinventions of immigrants. The fact that he is still Cuban and he is an American, the fact that he is a poet and he's gay, and the fact that he's from Miami and lives in Maine. All that is what we're all about, moving, coming, reinventing ourselves on an ongoing basis.
My guest is Ilan Stubbins. He is a professor in Latin America, American and Latino culture at Amherst, and also Maria Hinojosa is here, anchor and executive producer of Latino USA. Now, part of what you've just talked about, his lack of anger, I think he expressed so well when he talked about getting the news that he was the guy that would be delivering this inaugural poem. I wanted you to just hear what he had to say.
Oh, well, as you can imagine, I'm beside myself still, even though it's been a few weeks since I found out. I got a text message from my agent, who is usually a very calm and very well-together fellow, and he texted me and said, "You need to call me immediately." So luckily, I got in a traffic jam, and I was able to call him, and I heard the news, and of course, it took me 10 minutes still of just being stunned, just thinking about my parents and my grandparents and all the struggles that they've been through, and how here I am, first-generation Cuban-American, and this great honor that has just come to me, and just feeling that sense of incredible gratitude and love.
He said that he went on to say that he started writing the poem really right there. And so we'll all be looking forward to see what he has to say. That's Richard Blanco. He is the inaugural poet next Monday. He's openly gay. He's the youngest to be tapped for this duty at 44. And he is Latino. Now, while I have you two here, I wanted to switch topics because I wanted to talk to you about something that I became aware of a couple months or so. And I think it's very interesting because it's still part and part of the whole arts conversation. And that's what I like to call the kerfuffle going on at the Kennedy Center for the Arts with folks criticizing the lack of Latino honorees in the last really 10 years, but more than that. Of 180 honorees, Maria Hinojosa, only two have been Latino, and both of those in the 2000s. That was Placido Domingo, who is Spanish, and I think a lot of people might have thought he was Italian, and then Chita Rivera, who is American Puerto Rican. That was a little stunning to me, actually. I hadn't been keeping up with those numbers, but now there is a new committee to reassess the selection process and to pay more attention to the diversity process because it just hasn't been there in the past. I want to get your response.
You know, it's sad. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. It's sad because, you know, I remember as a kid watching the Kennedy Center honors, you know, and this big moment. And so for us, for there to not be a Latino just says, what's going on with that committee? What is going on with that committee? Who is making up that committee? If you are not able to see the kind of, you know, cultural contributions that Latinos have made to this country since forever, because we have been a part of this country since forever, then it's a moment for real self-reflection. I think that I would have expected the committee to be a little bit more humble and just say, my gosh, oh my gosh, this is, we need to look at this and we need to look at this fast. And there hasn't been that response. And I think that that's made it even more kind of painful for a lot of people out there in the community.
We should say that the National Hispanic Foundation for the Arts chairman, Felix Sanchez, is the one who has been sort of leading this charge. He called up the folks at the Kennedy Center after the September honorees were announced. And those honorees were Dustin Hoffman, David Letterman, Buddy Guy, you know, all worthy people. Nobody's saying anything about them. And just said, hey, this just is weird. Let's look at this. And I have to say that one report from ABC News says that his first conversation was brief and profane, not from him, but from the person who responded to him at the Kennedy Center, who then later apologized for his initial response. But now they have put together an 11-member committee, Elon, and they're going to look at this very carefully. What's your response? Had you known about this discrepancy for some time, and what's your response to now the regrouping, if you will, of the Kennedy Center to revisit this?
I think profanity is the right approach, but not from the point of view of the Kennedy Center, but from the rest of us, although I'm not going to engage in it. I think it's beyond sad. I think it is embarrassing. But the Kennedy Center seems to me to be one more institution of an assortment that is still living in a time that is not the present, where Latinos are only seen as delivering pizza or selling flowers or cleaning your garden. The country has changed dramatically, but it hasn't changed at the top, not in the cultural institutions, not in the academic institutions, where the number of deans and presidents of Latino background is still very, very small. It is time for those that are outside that realm to start teaching those that are in control of the culture, of the classrooms, of the big institutions, that the country is a different one, and that you have to start opening up. It is, I think, really embarrassing that of 180, only two Latinos constitute almost 18% of the nation's population. That would put the number of honorees, if we only played with demographics, at a much higher, close to 20, 30, 40. And yet, it is not there. And I can tell you, if you stopped one of this directors of major cultural institutions just on the spot and ask them, could you give me five major Latinos that are in theater, that are in movies, that are writers? The sad story, the embarrassing story is that they wouldn't be able to give them to you. And that is what I'm talking about, that not unless there is an opening of those minds beyond the honors that are given to accept a broader picture of what the United States is all about, the prizes and the awards are still going to remain in a very close niche of people that represent an America that is decades old.
You know how we say in Spanish, we say, te da pena ajena. You know, like you're feeling shamed for them.
Yes.
Like, absolutely.
That's what Ilan is saying. He's like, oh, come on, you guys, aren't you embarrassed? Yeah. And so again, the response should be immediate. Oh my God, you know, what an oversight. And yet. So I think it's important that there's a committee that's been formed. I guess I just feel,
five Latinos on that committee, by the way. Okay.
I guess I just feel that still, you know, this notion that I'm sure, given the immediate response, which involves some profanity, that perhaps the moment is not of accepting and welcoming, you know, and that's a little bit sad, right?
Yes.
You would want it to be where it's like open and celebrating and come in. And after you get that first response, it's like, wow, we've got an uphill battle. Nonetheless, it's being talked about. So that's a good thing. But don't forget, Callie, tonight.
No, I'm going to.
You're going to. We'll see
first,
everybody tonight.
Wait, hold on one second. I'm just going to say that my vote is for Carlos Santana. So there you go, right away. Let me just say that we've been talking about poet Richard Blanco. He will be reading his work Monday at President Obama's inauguration. And I've been joined by Ilan Stobbins, who is a professor of Latin America and Latino culture at Amherst, and also journalist Maria Hinojosa, who is tonight leading a discussion about the labor rights of domestic workers here at 6:30 at WGBH. The event is free and open to the public. And to learn more, you can go to wgbh.org/domestic workers. Thank you both for talking to me both about Richard Blanco and about the Kennedy Center for the Arts.
Thank you, Kelly. Thank you, Ilan. But you know what? It's not really a conversation about just the rights of the workers. It's about the fact that, you know what, now more than ever, people are employing domestic workers in one way or another to care for your kids, to care for your grandparents or your parents. And so it's really beginning to have a conversation about a topic that is really deeply invisible. And it happens in, you know, the intimacy of people's homes. So how do we manage this? And every one of us in one way or another is going to be engaging domestic workers in our lifetime. And so let's start the conversation. So that's what it's about. It's a broader conversation. So I do ask anybody who's out there who wants to come by tonight, 6 o'clock here at WGBH.
Well, thank you. And thank you for allowing us to tap you to come in and talk about these other issues as well.
My
Thanks so
pleasure.
Much. All right. Maria Hinojosa. All right.
What's happening, Callie?
Edgar B. Herg III.
So that was a really good conversation about Richard Blanco and poetry, which is something that's not in the spotlight at all. But let me ask you a question. What would happen if the inaugural poem was not written by even a renowned poet or a poet at all, but by all of us?
What about? I know I have a poem.
You have one ready?
Yeah.
Well, you should participate in this. We're going to talk about this. Our friends at The Takeaway are sort of crowdsourcing a poem for the inauguration through Twitter. So we're going to talk with their host, the man, John Hockenberry, about that effort in just a second.
All right. There you go. I'm
Callie
Crossley.
And I'm Edgar B. Herwick III. And this is Boston Public Radio.